Don't tell anyone I'm free. Don't tell anyone I'm free.
Hello, and welcome to BSD Talk number 59. It's Friday, August 4, 2006. Today, we're going to hear from another BSD end user, so we'll go right to that interview.
Today on BSD Talk, we're speaking with Matt Morley, and you are a, I guess we'll call you for this interview, a BSD end user, so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And I wanted to talk with you today about your use of BSD in both your personal and professional life, and where you use it, why you use it, how you use it, and all that other wonderful stuff. So perhaps
okay.
You could maybe start by describing, you know, what you do and where you use BSD.
Okay. I've got quite a long history with BSD. I sort of started using it in high school, which would have been back in 98. And I first started using Linux, actually, initially. And I made the jump from Linux to FreeBSD within the first 2 or 3 weeks. Because once I made that jump from using Windows to using Linux, I figured that I might as well try everything else that was out there. And I only made it as far as FreeBSD, and then I stopped. So I've been using it for quite a while for a lot of projects. I sort of use it anywhere really where it's appropriate, and there's a tremendous amount of places where it ends up being appropriate, especially when you need a system, not just FreeBSD, but OpenBSD, where you really need the reliability and need to worry about other things rather than just the box.
Maybe you could name a couple specific cases where you're using BSD?
Initially, I sort of started off with playing around with it on my laptop, and once I got more comfortable with it, I started putting it in place of my routers at home. This is back a couple of years. But I figured out that once high-speed cable came to the towns where I was living in and we got, you know, broadband access, the first thing that happened in the house was that everyone started fighting over the computer. So I got a small little dedicated box and installed BSD. And so we sort of had it doing packet filtering. I think it was packet filter back then. And from there, we sort of eventually moved on to OpenBSD. And you know, for the most part, once it was up and running, installed, and functioning, we sort of forgot about it. And there's been a lot of cases where it's been served, in my experience, as a router or as a firewall for that sort of purpose, where it's been someone needed this very specifically, either for a firewall or protection or for routing for multiple clients. And, you know, I could do the installation of the box, you know, and more or less forget about it. And if anything did come up, then I could always go back through and check the logs and actually do a lot of work remotely. I've always sort of done work on the side, and while doing that, the BSD box has always seemed a really appropriate use for the technology.
Now, when you're looking at using a BSD machine or any kind of machine to allow you to share a network connection, a lot of people might say, why not use just something like a Linksys router or other small, inexpensive device to do that? Were you primarily trying to beat the cost, or were there additional features that you were looking for?
Initially, it was not so much a beat the cost because Linksys routers weren't, you know, there weren't a tremendous amount of them on the market when I started doing this. I mean, they were here and there, but I had the boxes laying around. And I've sort of always had older hardware, computer hardware laying around. I always sort of pick it up when I see people tossing stuff out. So I actually happened to have 3 or 4 boxes sitting around, so the cost of sending it up was buying a network card. And plus, I got the experience of playing with it, and I've always liked to tinker with computers, so it seemed a good match at the time. And the performance actually was a lot better than other routers I had used at my friends' houses who were having issues with low-latency games, like first-person shooters. And the routing actually done on the BSDs felt a lot faster.
So from using it at your own house and for your personal use, you then moved on to using it in your professional life?
Yes. When I was in high school, I sort of got into BSD use then. Unix in general, and as I left high school, I looked at going to college. I went to college very briefly before I decided it wasn't necessarily the right avenue for me to go down, at least initially. And I actually got a job as a Tier 2 Unix administrator for Genuity, which at the time was a Tier 1 backbone. So it made a big difference because I jumped from high school right into doing it as a full-time job. And it was my experience with FreeBSD, particularly, not so much Linux. I've never been a really strong user. But it was my BSD experience that sort of helped me get into the job. And once I got there, I was surprised to find out how, you know, really familiar most of the Unix-based operating systems was. Because before that, I had only been sort of exposed lightly to Linux and lightly to OpenBSD, but I'd been a very heavy FreeBSD user. And as I got to Genuity, we were doing a lot of stuff, you know, SonOS, Solaris, IRIX, HPUX, AIX, and, you know, obviously they're not identical, and some of them do things that are smarter than others, but it's, you know, the underlying system is very similar, and it's very similar concepts, and it was kind of nice to be able to sort of step into there and have a personal background in using BSD as a user instead of just as an administrator.
So after that job at Genuity, you moved on to other places, and did you do any consulting or any other opportunities to introduce BSD into different environments?
Yes. There's, while sort of all my daytime career has gone on, I've always done side work, and sort of as I was coming to Genuity and as I left Genuity, I sort of had a hobby where I was very into first-person shooter games, and my clan that I was in needed a server, so I stepped up and set up the server, and we were running FreeBSD initially out of my house, and then once we got enough complaints from the broadband connection company early on, we decided to go colo, and so I bought some boxes, nothing too extreme, but tailored to sort of what we needed, and got a colo contract, and actually shipped the boxes off running FreeBSD, and we started hosting servers from there. And at the time, the server, the game server we were running, only barely offered Linux support, and it ran, but it wasn't fabulous, because it's a Windows-only based game for the client side, but the server side was Windows-only initially, and then they did a Linux port. And so I was running this Linux port on FreeBSD through Linux emulation. And that was sort of an interesting set of experiences because I was sort of having to remotely monitor the boxes and check processes, and I found myself, you know, writing little scripts to make sure it was running. And on those machines, in first-person shooters, low latency is incredibly important. And what I found happening was that the machines weren't as responsive as some of the, you know, Windows machines felt, and there was definitely a noticeable difference. And when you're dealing with such low latency, you start to feel it when you have, you know, 20 people connecting and sort of expecting 20 to 40 millisecond, you know, response times. And I actually found myself diving a little bit deeper and playing with the settings and ended up adjusting the HD setting early on so that we could cause the clock to run faster in FreeBSD. And what that ended up causing is actually, you know, increased CPU usage because you're running more frequently and you're pulling more frequently. But because these boxes were dedicated to that purpose, you know, it seemed a good trade-off, and we ended up having really impressive latency on the machine itself, and then we had good connections as well. So it all sort of helped to keep the machine up and running and pretty fast, considering, you know, the investment in it, which was, you know, only out of my pocket.
And where you work currently, are you also using BSD?
For my day job, I work for a company which mainly produces software for insurance, for the insurance industry. And we do a lot of number crunching, a lot of rating. And it's when I joined them initially, they were a Windows shop, which was sort of a big change for me. And I came in sort of as a developmental role to move their software onto the internet. And sort of that's sort of been a long, ongoing process, but we've actually gotten to the point now where we've released it. But during several years while we were working on it, it became apparent that we needed more and more things that sort of just came with BSD. And when I first joined there, they were running a Microsoft proxy, web proxy. And the only way you could get out onto the internet from the network was through logging into the domain server, which meant that I couldn't bring my old FreeBSD laptop to work to do anything on because I couldn't get out onto the internet. And so at one point we were having more and more problems where the machine needed to be reset on a constant basis. And that was really, you know, because it's not open source, it's really the only solution is to keep resetting and hoping it, you know, works when it reboots. And after, you know, we'd gotten sick of that enough, I sort of said, well, you know, I can put in a router box for you. Because we hadn't really discussed a lot of my BSD background with them when they hired me because it wasn't really relevant to the development I was doing. So as we did that, that was the first machine that got swapped out. And so from then on, you know, we could do routing through that machine. Then that machine started doing, you know, backups for us, and we started doing remote off-site backups from our website to the in-house machines through the firewall, and then we added a couple more machines. And we started sort of doing automatic backups, and again, only through stuff like simple scripts we were doing analysis of our source code, not really to pull any sort of heavy meaning out of it, but to sort of keep us all in touch with what was changing. And that sort of simple uses of having the machine there, you know, and there's no really easy way to automate that stuff in Windows, you know, just doing a diff across a couple of directories. or doing MD5 hashes just to let us know which files across all of our backups we're changing, so we can sort of keep an eye on source code that was shared across multiple projects, not necessarily causing issues with the other. Again, because it's a Windows shop, it's something like CVS really, you know, wasn't relevant as a way to solve the problem. And we sort of moved on now. Our web application that we're hosting actually is based off of FreeBSD as a server. It's been something that actually has allowed us to actually worry about the application and sort of almost not worry at all about the underlying platform, which is a nice change coming from a Windows development where there's a lot of complications dealing with installing software, registering software, removing software, dealing with parts of the operating system that were, you know, were once upgradable, suddenly, you know, in Service Pack 2 XP become protected by the OS, such as Microsoft Data Access component. That stuff not changed. And it's sort of been very nice just to go back to something very simple as a base that's very reliable and stable and just focus on building the application layer that runs on top of it.
Are other people at the company aware that FreeBSD is being used, or is it mostly that they think that the technology people are just working their magic?
They're certainly aware of it, but in terms of what it would mean to them versus is it running Windows, well, they definitely know it crashes less, which makes a really, really big difference. In fact, the last uptime on the machine, I had to do a patch on it, was OpenBSD for the router, and the uptime, they had forgotten about the fact that they had to restart the Windows proxy every couple of months until I mentioned it. And I said, well, we haven't done that in the last year and a half. And they're sort of like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And those little things like that, you know, they don't necessarily fully understand what is being replaced. They just know that it's being replaced by something that they have to worry about a whole lot less, and something I have to worry about a whole lot less, so it frees me up to do a lot of other things. They're not necessarily fully knowledgeable about the BSD aspect of it, but they're certainly aware that it works better than what they had in place before.
Let's talk a little bit about the management of these machines, because a lot of people, when they're first introduced to the BSDs, are perhaps a little intimidated by the mechanism that you use to patch and keep them updated. How do you feel it works for you, and do you think that the process of maintaining a BSD box is that difficult?
Our patching process is a little bit different than what I'd probably recommend for most people. Because we have such a tightly locked down network, the number of people who are on the machines is highly restricted, so it's not we don't have a lot of open users, you know, in the sense that we're not doing web hosting or anything along those lines. It's really for development staff, and the development staff's obviously, you know, technically competent, so we're not necessarily concerned about insider attacks to a great extent. Although that's always, you know, it's always a concern, but not as much as most places. I prefer just to actually keep the source code on the machine or on a central machine and just download the patches. And patching machine doesn't really take that much time. If you're doing it, it can be a little confusing, and I certainly recommend making sure the machine's up to date no matter what you do, whether you're doing binary updates or whether you're doing, you know, compiling yourself. It's really important as a step to learn, especially if the machine's facing outward. But you can also pare down services. For example, our outside firewalls aren't accessible from the outside intentionally for that reason. But in terms of the internal machines, it allows us, you know, to do patches, and you subscribe to the mailing list, so obviously you get notices about when patches need to be applied.
And how about the availability of software on the BSDs? Do you feel limited by the software selection?
Years ago, I probably would have said yes. From early on, I sort of didn't really worry too much about the data that I was keeping on my machines and the application. Because it was my own machine, I didn't mind constantly rewiping them and loading up machines. And as the years have gone on, there's become a lot more software. I've needed Windows, in a sense, a whole lot less. But I think in general, a lot of people will be surprised about exactly what sort of software they really need to function on a BSD machine. People get very comfortable using the software that they have on the system they're using. And if you start looking, you know, about what you're missing from Windows, going to Unix, or going to FreeBSD, there's a lot that was missing. And that's only been replaced a lot by the open source and free source developers, and in terms of user land applications, you know, those text editors, those mail editors, and with X getting better, the graphical interface and that side of things, there's a tremendous amount of software out there now that fills almost all of those needs. I wouldn't hesitate today to suggest that there's, unless you're, you know, a very basic end user where you're looking for something out of the box that's going to solve all your problems theoretically, and offer you all sorts of photo software and interactive media, I'd say that's the only area where it's really missing. Beyond that, all the office suites are in place, all the communication suites are in place, you know, being able to instant messages there, and your data is fairly safe. So from that sort of perspective, I wouldn't say that we're missing much software, but there are certainly certain packages that you're not just going to find on FreeBSD, and that's mainly because the interest just isn't there. Because if you're actually in that environment, you may find very much that you don't actually need a lot of that complication. Sort of actually something interesting the other day, I recently got a Mac laptop, and I was looking through some of the add-ons that they have for the panels, and it's feeling very familiar for me in terms of feeling like GNOME with a panel at the top. And, you know, I sort of went and looked poking around thinking, well, where am I going to find the weather applet so I can drop the weather applet into GNOME so I can keep a track of the weather? Browsing around the Mac site, and ends up, they actually now sell all these little applets that I'm used to installing for free that come with GNOME. But obviously it's Mac OS X, so it's, you know, the developers, I'm sure you can load up other ones. But it was sort of an interesting moment when I looked at that, and I thought, well, it's funny that all the things that we've been taking for granted in open source that we now have, you know, these little widgets that everyone's created, there's not actually people on Mac OS selling them, which is sort of a strange turnaround from saying, you know, is OpenBSD missing software? But it's funny to see the things that we've been taking for granted actually coming back as being things to be purchased.
And speaking of software availability, do you still have time for first-person shooters? And what's your favorite open-source first-person shooter?
I don't actually play first-person shooters anymore. I did for a while, and as I've gotten more into tech, I've actually found less and less time to play. I've done servers for people on and off as sort of favors and sort of helped them get it set up. Mainly, I used to play Counter-Strike, which is a game, and then later on they swapped that system to use a different login system called Steam from Valve Software, and that sort of really complicated a lot of the Linux and BSD hosting of the server, and sort of from that point on I sort of dropped off and I actually started getting a lot more into the development side of things.
So if development is taking a lot of your time away from gaming, what tools are you normally working with?
The web application that I work with mostly at my day job, and actually the language that I deal with the most right now, is PHP. And not, it's sort of, PHP is only the server back-end part of it. A significant portion of it is actually JavaScript glue up to an HTML front-end. The JavaScript ends up talking to the back-end, which does most of the heavy lifting where it's appropriate. So that's the language I use the most. As I've been looking recently sort of into doing 3D visualization as a coding tool, mainly to watch data, and sort of the applications we write tend to be fairly complex. They have a significant number of rules, and there's a lot of math that's involved in them. And doing small changes can have ripple effects of where these other changes are, and sort of being able to visualize that and sort of seeing what you're doing in real time across a large data set, you know, me changing the order of these three or four functions or these three or four steps can make dollar differences in premiums or in large policies can make, you know, very big differences. And so I'm sort of looking, trying to get into the visualization of that to make the code a little stronger, a little more robust, so we can sort of see what the effects of it are, not just in numbers, but actually visually. And as I sort of look into that more and more, I've been ending up looking that I'm going to have to be learning Python, which isn't necessarily a problem, but it's a language I haven't quite been able to wrap my head around yet. Just been a little bit too much buried in PHP lately.
Now, when you say you do a lot of number crunching, are you storing all these numbers in databases or files, or what's your stack look like?
The stack that we use is, right now, is FreeBSD for the OS, and then we're running Apache, PHP, MySQL. We're using MySQL to store the data, and we actually use it fairly intensely because it's a web application. We're constantly saving the data after every change, and this isn't public software, so it's not a load issue in that sense. Is these are software that are written very specifically for business, and it's very important that they don't lose their data, especially, you know, insurance. If you're entering, for example, a fleet policy and you have 300 cars you're insuring, you can't really have the application crashing on, you know, on the 200th location and you losing all that data, because it's a significant amount of work that has to go into inputting that data. So what we end up doing is we actually end up saving the data to the server on every change, which is nice for the clients, because not only do they not have to install anything, but they don't ever have to worry about losing data in the process. And obviously, you know, we do backups so that we make sure that we're not losing data from the server.
So it seems like open source and BSD are really part of the foundation of your business at this point.
Yeah, it serves a really big purpose, and it's definitely the way not just us, but a lot of companies are heading, because we need to be in a position where we can solve our clients need business-wise, and that isn't as easy to do on Windows. We looked at doing it on Windows because, you know, traditionally we're a Microsoft shop, and as we looked more and more at it, it was going to become not only expensive but complex and not necessarily reliable in terms of running the software and sort of keeping this, and we were sort of looking at data backends and hosting uptimes, and with the open source platform that we're using, you know, we have an open source OS, we have an open source web server, we have an open source language, and we have an open source database using HTML and JavaScript and a lot of open standard languages, which makes a big difference for resolving problems because I can be the go-to man to solve the problems we're having instead of necessarily waiting for a company to publish an update when there were several circumstances we were in that the Microsoft concerning their rounding functions and, you know, dealing with small numbers and doing lots of factors and crunching where, you know, not only step order, but rounding becomes a really big issue, especially when you're dealing with very large policies with lots of data and you can't really have rounding errors. So in those sort of circumstances, it's very important for us that we've been able to have this and sort of have the ability to fix it should it go wrong without having to wait for someone else to fix the problem that we report to them. In case of PHP and MySQL, there's obviously a very large active user base. And although we haven't run into any complications so far, there were a couple concerns that we ran into, and it was very nice to see that there were concerns that other people had, and they were actually actively being addressed rather than just being in the queue of things to be fixed for the next release.
Were there any concerns in the business when going with open source and BSD that it would be difficult to find staff in the future who were trained with this skill set?
That was part of the concern, and it was actually the reason at the time that I picked PHP as opposed to picking a language like Python or Ruby, which were other languages I sort of considered at the time when I was proposing this project, or, you know, sort of the direction we should be heading with this software. It's actually easier, I think, to find an open source developer to be competent in PHP and be exposed to MySQL. And when I was in high school, this certainly wasn't the case. That's sort of when I first started getting into PHP. You know, it was a very non-popular language, and, you know, it was obviously very useful, but it just hadn't quite gained that foothold. And at this point, it sort of crossed that threshold where I could probably walk up and down my street to find several PHP developers, which, you know, even if they're still in high school, because it's what is exposed to the children and the young users without any cost. And when you get used to something that not necessarily has any cost, but is also reliable, you're very much unlikely to swap back to something that costs you money and is less reliable.
All right. Well, are there any other topics that you want to talk about today?
It wasn't necessarily an easy step to convincing the company that that's the direction we should be heading. And it was definitely worth it from a technical aspect, and given my background, especially working, you know, with backup software previously and hosting servers and, you know, even working for a Tier 1 backbone, this argument still wasn't easy to be made, that this was the right step forward. But it's an important step to be made because it's, in many circumstances, obviously not all, but in many circumstances, it is actually a very superior platform to run on. And there are times when it's not correct, but those circumstances are becoming lesser and lesser with the function set that comes with open source software. And not just open source, free source as well, but being a BSD user, I tend to be more of the open source mentality than the free source mentality. But I would sort of say that it's important not to let projects just slide by when open source offers a very attractive platform and an attractive solution just because it's open source.
All right. Well, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you doing the shows a great deal. I'm still trying to catch up with the rest of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay ahead of everybody. So, all right. Well, thanks again, and maybe we'll catch up with you later.
Okay. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to leave comments on the website or reach the show archives, you can find them at bsdtalk.blogspot.com. Or if you'd like to send me an email, you can reach me at bitgeist@yahoo.com. That's bitgeist@yahoo.com. Thank you for listening. This has been BSD Talk number 59.